Hello, and welcome back to Fave This. We took a little break, we collected ourselves, but we've come back. Fave This, a podcast about fandom, internet culture, video games. I'm Geeta Jackson, and I'm joined by...
Patricia Hernandez. Hey, Geeta. We always joke that it's been, like, a million years from, like, morning to now, but, like, it genuinely feels like a lot has changed. Like, North Korea and South Korea are no longer at war.
That's so crazy.
You know, that's not something that I would have guessed the last time that we were on this podcast.
I, like, feel like I live in a different reality than the one I lived in from this morning, and it's super weird. It's super weird, but we're here to talk about video games.
Yeah.
That's where I go now.
Specifically, Fortnite, which we were just talking about on Split Screen. If you guys haven't listened to that episode, you should tune in. But we have a story. You have
so
a story.
I finally tried Fortnite because my roommate came back from her trip to, she went to Colorado, I think, somewhere. And she came back and she was like, Geeta, can we play Fortnite? And this was the first time my roommate had expressed any interest at all in playing video games. So I was like, hell yeah. And I brought the PS4 onto the living room and... ate shit immediately several times. And then my roommates were both like, I think we get it now. I don't think we need to play anymore. But in a couple
of times... So in their minds, it's the video game in which you eat shit.
Yeah, basically. Okay. That's what they've decided it is. I'm determined to get good at it so they can see what it looks like to actually play Fortnite. Mm-hmm. But I'm taking a break from it for now because I got God of War. But yeah, when I played and I was trying to learn how to play and eating shit, you know, I'm not great at shooters, but I try. One of the first games that happened to me... I got shot really, really early on by someone, someone just, like, caught me off guard. And then as I was dying, they stood over me, and then they did the take the L dance. And I just got, like, so, like, rip-shitting mad. I was, like, so angry. And, like, it felt so rude.
Yeah, so we started talking about this a little bit in DMs about how... It's interesting that so much of the identity of this game in the public lives through the dances. Like, I swear to God, I was walking to get my hair cut, like, on Sunday or something, and this kid comes out of a bodega, and he starts doing one of the dances from the game. And I'm like, wow, it's just everywhere. And I know if you're, like... You know, if you're in high school, teachers see it all the time. Like, kids just do it to, like, celebrate or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think specifically if you play, you distinctly remember the first time that someone did the take the L dance on you. And it's, like, bound to happen to you, like, within your first session, I think. Because it's just, it's so iconic to the game. I certainly remember when it happened to me the first time. And you know what I did? I did get mad, but the first thing I did was go onto the shop to see if I could buy it, and then I bought it. I spent money on this thing. I can't remember how much it cost, like $5 or $10, something like absurd in the abstract that I feel like almost embarrassed to admit, but I bought the thing because I thought it was important that the next time that I got a kill, I was going to do it on someone. And then, of course, the time came and I killed someone. But I hadn't practiced how to do it, so I fucked up doing the dance, and I was like, this is my sole mission in life, to do this dance on someone, and so, like, I kept playing until I did it on someone, and then I was like, I don't know what I've become, and, like, why this was so important to me, but it's just, there's something about it, there's something about the dances in that game, the emotes specifically, that, because it's not even that they're, like, good, like, I don't know that they're, like, dancing in a particularly impressive way, but I think it's that, is this
they're
uncommon,
like,
that there's...
meme dances,
yeah,
right? It's, like, the floss dance is one, Destiny has that one, too. Mm-hmm. And the Take the L dance, that one comes from the Pennywise the Clown in the most recent It movie.
Oh, really?
Does the leg moving out thing. The L is something that they added into the emote. And, like, a lot of the skins, too, come from pop culture. John Wick is a skin, for instance. Yeah.
I'm surprised that that's, like, in there.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's, like, fine.
Well, I guess they don't call it John Wick as a thing. The fandom calls it John Wick, but I'm surprised that the people who own that kind of likeness aren't, like,
Keanu's too nice to push, like, legislate. Like, he would be too nice to litigate that. Mm-hmm. He's a kind man that just wants to get through the day.
You see that picture of him like eating a sub on the sidewalk street?
Oh my God.
I feel it's so funny that he like doesn't even have to really do anything and it becomes a meme.
I know. He just has to, like, he's just got such a morose face. And there was, he just, and he's also like a genuinely kind person. One of my favorite videos on the internet of all time is just Keanu Reeves on the subway, and he sees, he's got a seat, and he sees a woman, you know, that just gets on the train. It's pretty crowded, and he just motions to her and was like, do you want to sit down? Yeah. She's like, no, no, don't worry about it. And he's like, are you sure you can sit down? He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
John Wick is a good movie also. John Wick 2, I don't know. But John Wick, first one, good movie.
I've only watched the second one and I missed half of it. Well, not half of it. I missed a good chunk of it because that was when PewDiePie shat the bed and the news was happening.
Oh, God.
And like Steven was frantically like texting me like, do you know what this, like, can you write this up? I was like, no, I'm at the theater right now. Like, I'm on my phone.
The perils of this job. You missed John Wick 2.
Yeah.
It was nice to see him get to back together with Morpheus.
I missed the part where, what's her face? Rose, is that her name? The lady who like shaves her head?
Oh, yeah. Ruby Rose.
Ruby Rose. Yeah. I missed the part where she like fought with him.
Yeah. That was a really good fight scene. I love the scene with him in Common, the fight scene. That was a good fight scene also. Maybe two was fine. I don't know. I just like soured in my memory a little bit because it was like a little bit over the top. But anyway. Fortnite.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, they're easy to do, the dances. Like, you see a lot of soccer players do them, especially the take the L and the flossing dance.
Yeah, it's become like a sports phenomenon.
Yeah,
now.
It's really weird. I saw my friend's band is recording a bunch of covers for their album right now, and they did the flossing. One of them
did
the flossing dance. Like, they secretly took a video of my friend Dylan doing the flossing dance while they were in the studio and then posted on their Twitter account. But it's like, these are... they're dances that come from other things, so people already all know them. But because they're so strongly associated with Fortnite, these are their Fortnite dances.
Right. So I don't know if – is this uncommon for, like, emotes in other games to have music attached to them? Because I can't remember that being the case on Destiny, but maybe I'm misremembering. And I think that's a part of it because, like, it's not just the take – I feel like when you say take the L, specifically what happens in my mind is it imagining someone dancing it. It's the – music.
The creepy clown music.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. And that clown music is so mocking also.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
that's
it's
part
such
of it.
A mean-spirited emo, and it's the only one in the game that is that mean-spirited. So it's so frustrating when someone does it to you.
And it's interesting too, just to like what degree the emotes aren't just there to like make fun of, like aren't just there for competition. Like there's a specific one, I can't remember exactly what you do, but you kind of like put both your arms up, and I think it looks like you're kind of begging or something. I can't remember what it is, but like, I want to buy it because I have this fantasy in my head that I'm going to play this game and like convince someone not to shoot me. because there are a lot of times when it's like, when I see someone and I start jumping and I just start, like, I'm obviously not shooting them, and they like pause for a second because they don't really know what to do or what I'm doing. And then they shoot me. I'm like, if that happened to me and someone was like actively not shooting me and they were just like jumping, I'd like jump back at them.
Yeah,
it's kind of like I want the equivalent of the booyah thing in Splatoon.
Yeah.
In this, and so I have seen some people that like use this the emote where they're like begging, and the other person doesn't do anything, and
that's
I kind of want to
so
befriend someone.
There's like a weird language of emotes. I mean, we talked a little bit also. There's like a stereotype surrounding skins.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're a player that has a rust skin, everybody thinks that you're a big shithead.
Yep. Well, John Wick too. I don't know what it is. Like everyone's always like, fucking John Wicks, like they're just like boneheads. And I think it's partially because like I think Ninja wore the John Wick skin for a while, and like that was his thing. And so then a lot of like people who kind of wanted to be like him, or even just like, you gotta think like, who would want to kind of be like John Wick in this game?
Yeah,
they're not going to be John fucking Wick, because it's a game in which like you only have one life, and it's very easy to die.
Like gun kata in here. No.
Yeah, like it's so easy to die, and in fact, you're probably gonna die right away. So, the people who are going in there being like, "I'm gonna be a badass," probably aren't. I think it's just hard to be a bad. Like, you watch Ninja clips, and he's fucking amazing. But like, what most people just do is like, they get shot once, and it's like one wall, and then like it's just like ridiculous in the abstract. I feel like it's so hard to make. Or even something like rocket riding. Like, I can't do that shit.
Yeah.
Like,
rocket riding looks impossible to me. It really does. I've seen some really cool people building really creatively.
Mm-hmm.
I saw someone on a highlight reel episode. Someone was up on the top of the tower, so the other person just kept building and building and building until they could just see the guy at the top of the vantage point, and then managed to snipe them from the top of their tiny tower.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I love people who just know there are people around them and they don't care. Like, they just keep building up and keep building up, and then people keep shooting at them. And I almost feel like I almost never shoot at people who are building up, because I'm just like, why would I be that asshole? I kind of want to see how high they get, or if someone else shoots them to the ground and then they die.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because like sometimes people will do it even though they have like really good weapons, and there's just something that goes off in their head and just be like, fuck it. It's because it's so easy to start a new game, and who cares, right? So
yeah, there is something nice about the speed of games like Fortnite. Like you die and you get in a new game almost immediately. It's like totally fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's this like the community way more so. And this is something that we didn't talk about on Split Screen, but I think is relevant to their question of like why this game is so popular. There is like this like really codified language that the players use to speak to each other, because it's another game like Splatoon where you can't really talk to other players or don't necessarily want to.
Mm-hmm,
And that makes like the community of Fortnite really strong and really recognizable. You know, PUBG doesn't have these kinds of options. Like, you can't, they just introduced like weapon skins and they all kind of suck.
Oh, no.
They're all like really pretty ugly. And they don't
have
emotes,
really. I mean,
what
a concept, right? Like, I thought about this. There was this game that let you put like charms on your guns, kind of like you put them on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being obsessed with this, but then I like stopped and thought, like, how weird is it that it's someone's job to make guns look cool and like trendy or whatever? And like, I don't mind it when it's like Call of Duty and it's like, oh, the marijuana leaf is just like plastered all over it, because that's just like so like memey. But like the idea of like making something that's like as aesthetically attractive as like a cool shoe or something is kind of like weird
that
to think about
weird.
It in
Fortnite they do that in a way where everything feels really cartoony,
right?
So it feels a little bit better because it's like, you know, like a big Acme hammer or something,
right? But I feel like there's like, not really I don't feel like there's the same degree of like weapon fetishization, because like your weapon might be a literal plunger with like a ninja knife through it, and it's just like, so it's so cartoony, it's so absurd. It's not like I'm gonna kill you with the AR-15 from like 500 feet and like snipe you in the head. Like
it's not like where you're actually learning about bullet, you know, specific kinds of bullets and specific kinds of like guns the way that, you know, PUBG. I've learned that people really hate it when you call it plunk bat. And now I really want to call it plunk bat forever.
Yeah,
that's like a rock, paper, shotguns, I think, started talking about that. And anyway, it's just like it's like this two different schools of thought about competitive gaming or just gaming in general. There's people who are really, really serious about it and really appreciate the really like the hard systems of a game like PUBG. And then, you know, Fortnite is not as good, the systems aren't as good, and it's a way goofier, and they just keep kind of throwing shit at the game and hoping that something catches on, and trends happen much faster in Fortnite, I think, than in PUBG. And the latter one.
I feel like there's an element of the game that is inherently more social, like you... you know, there's not fucking promposals in PUBG.
Yeah.
The PUBG wasn't used as a thing to, like, measure your relationship because there was that whole thing of, like, oh, someone texts you back while they're playing. Like, that's a thing that you experience in almost every game. But, like, for some reason, Fortnite specifically was the one in which it became, like, a meme or whatever. And then there's the dances that you can, if you've been out in the world, you've probably seen it without even realizing some, if you know some kids. I think... part of the reason that it has that virality is because of its cartoonish aesthetic. I feel like it goes more towards, like, younger kids, teens, and, like, by sheer force, because teens, like, know the internet, they'll make it viral, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you think about, like, who's, like, the stereotypical PUBG player probably goes on Reddit
and an image of Jack Frags just, like, jumped in my head when you said stereotypical PUBG player. And I love Jack Frags, but that's just who I picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, someone in their mid-20s with a beard who goes on Reddit, you know? Someone who's a little bit more,
it's interesting,
you know,
that you specifically imagined a dude, because that's another thing that Fortnite has going for it. Like, I know so many women who are playing. It's kind of got that Overwatchy factor to it. Like, my cousin who doesn't play games at fucking all, she's like a lawyer who, like, is extremely busy, and, like, I got on Instagram and she's uploading one. She's like,
that's amazing.
She was like, where are we not dropping now, boys? I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, No, my two roommates, they don't play games at all. One of them did request that I buy Wolfenstein so that she could shoot some Nazis, which I'm still going to get on that girl. But they don't play games at all, but they were both interested in knowing what Fortnite was. Like, they both know who Drake is. So they were like, what's this game, Gina? Like, what is it?
Well, it looks friendlier. Like I said, like, there's something about PUBG that just looks so, like, dour and, like, somber. And, like, you show it to someone and it's like, oh, it's a stereotypical shooter. Right?
It looks like Counter-Strike Global Offensive.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because, like, I've talked to some artists, and there are so many people who really hate the look of Fortnite. They hate the, like, the color palette. They hate what the characters look like. But it's so interesting that there's that dichotomy between, like, people who have taste in, like, art, and then people who play the game, and it's, like, just has this mass appeal that is not, like...
Yeah, I mean, people still see, like, DreamWorks animated pictures, right?
Right.
I think most of those movies, like Boss Baby and shit, I think they look like complete warmed up.
Oh, yeah.
Ass,
I saw Boss Baby recently. And
Oh, my God.
Everyone had that, like, DreamWorks face. And, like, that was kind
of,
like...
the weird smirk face.
Yeah, it's so hard to describe, but I think the same thing is happening here. And I think there's somewhat of a class element to it because they stylized it to the degree that they did because it's easier to make that run on, like, on cheaper hardware. So it doesn't look as, like, it's the same thing with, like, Overwatch or TF2 or whatever. Although I actually like Overwatch's, well, I say that, but did you see that meme where it's like every woman has the same face?
Yes.
So maybe they've lost a little bit of that design spark. It's like, it comes and goes. Like, you look at someone like Moira, and everyone's going crazy over how she looks like a lesbian, I guess.
Yeah, she looks like a lesbian.
Like a
she
Dom or something. Like, I don't know.
A lesbian David Bowie Dom.
Yeah, or I just saw a bunch of...
She looks like Annie Lennox from the Eurythmics.
So, but then you get someone like Brigitte. Is that how you pronounce her name? Brigitte?
Yeah. Something like that.
And she just has generic face with...
Yeah,
like
with
armor.
brown hair, generic face. Yeah, I mean,
I guess they can't all be winners. Yeah, they've been around for long enough that, like, of course, some of them.
Well, if you think about that, like, there's been so many hero shooters that have tried to come even close to what Overwatch's appeal, and none of them have made it. And like you might is what you know, Overwatch is, you know, gunning for the Team Fortress 2 money, but mm-hmm. it's completely overtaken Team Fortress 2 in popularity.
Yeah, I wonder
that,
though
that
like,
sort of like bright, cartoony, soft edges animation style that Team Fortress 2 did like also have. It is like really easy on the eyes. The bright mm-hmm. colors, you know, we're all kind of magpies at the end of the day. We like to go through the shiniest thing. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I really get it. It does look more approachable. It looks nicer. It looks like a less scary.
Yeah, it looks like a game if your kid is playing it and you're a parent, you're like, yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
Like, yeah. This is a nice game. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas
Who's
I don't know that,
that
people. And then all of a sudden you'd like get on your mom's computer and then her search history is like all Moira and you're yeah. just like, what's up?
Learn something new about my mom today. You know, whenever I think about Moira, I can't stop. Someone made a meme when she was first announced that was like, she's got two options, bone hurting juice and bone healing juice.
I thought it was bone specifically.
Oh, my bones. Oh, bone hurting juice. Bone hurting juice is this meme that I don't understand.
What is
where,
it?
I don't know where this meme came from. If you know where bone hurting juice originated, please let me know. Because all I know is one day I signed on Twitter and everyone was just tweeting, ooh, my bones.
I'm just imagining a bunch of skeletons.
Yeah, like, just drinking all that bone hurting juice. Okay. I don't know.
So, you've been playing God of War. What
oh,
do you think?
A fuck ton of God of War. It's like really weird to play a game as my father. Yeah, I've been liking this game more than I thought I would. I have like some disdain for most narratives about dads who have problems.
Well, because I feel like it's been overdone, well, right? Games. Well, in media in general.
In
right?
media
like,
in general, especially in games. So you're starting to see old guard game developer people turn 40, have children, and then make a game about being a parent. That's The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite. Those are the two like most prominent examples.
But there are a bunch of other
there's
ones.
There's a bunch of other ones. And this one, Corey Balrog, I think so. Barlog, there we go. He is also, you know, not too recently, but he's a father of a kid around the age of Atreus in the game. And he's talked a little bit about his relationship to his kid. Apparently, he based a bunch of Atreus's characterization on his own child, which is pretty cool because it makes me really endeared to his son.
Yeah,
Atreus
I mean,
is a nice little guy.
Yeah, I've only played through the intro and he definitely doesn't just seem like this AI that follows you around. He seems to actually talk like a child.
Yeah.
Like that, there's that. And also makes you scared in the same way that a child does because like you played through that, I guess this is mild spoilers, where you've kill that first troll and he just goes like wild on it and he's like you mean nothing to me. I'm like,
yeah.
that's a hard parenting
yeah.
moment.
There's
yeah.
a lot of this in here where I feel like it's my big issue with Bioshock Infinite especially mm-hmm. was that Elizabeth was never really like a person.
No, she was there to like be useful to the player either mechanically when you're in a fight she gives you stuff or mm-hmm. While you're walking around she like points out things of interest and she like kind of goes
she's
over.
She's this big doe-eyed Disney princess who does not really have her own narrative. She's an object in your story and she ends up all powerful but she does not really have anything of her own going for her. Whereas mm-hmm. Atreus, like even in that intro you kind of get a feeling for what Kratos is afraid of for his son.
Right.
Like when he sees him like stabbing the shit out of the troll that's already dead, he's like, oh, holy shit. Like, I can't let my child be like this. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you kind of get this because he's a god, right? So I'm not that far, but I assume the kid also must have some destiny that he keeps saying, like, you're not ready. And like, well, what is it? I'm not far enough to know, but like, I kind of get the sense that he is meant to be someone and he's like trying to prepare him.
I'll just say if I gotta play a dad game, I'm glad this is the dad game I'm playing. I feel like this game goes a little bit further into actual themes of parenting mm-hmm. that players of any gender could understand and relate to. I definitely see a lot of my own father in Kratos, like my own father's frustrations and fears, and it's making me relate to him a little bit more. And I, in fact, like, if I ever get a chance to, like, sit down and put my father in front of a video game, it would probably be this one. Yeah. It is frustrating sometimes to see a lot of people dismiss this game out of hand just because it is about being a dad.
Yeah, and I get it. People are tired, and I'm like,
I'm not going to tell anyone to play this game if they don't want to.
I would really love for there to be a momification of games, because it would be such a different game. Like, I can't even imagine what it would be, because we're only starting to kind of see that in media. Yeah. And, like, in general, like, and a lot of times when moms are depicted, they're like, the person who ruins the fun, the, like, the harpy, the whatever. Like, you look at Skylar in Breaking Bad, and, like, and, like, I don't even think that she acted in a way that wasn't like, I feel like any sane person would act in the way that she did, but everyone took it as like, oh, she just doesn't appreciate him enough or whatever. So I think, and I don't know if how likely it is that we'll get a like a mom game that feels true, just given how many men make games. And who knows? I'm sure someone's probably capable of it. But
the trailer for that new Gabrielle Union movie, that upcoming, it's called Break In.
No.
And it's like, Gabrielle Union and her kids are going back to their old house, which is this insane panic room house. And while they're there, some people try to break in, but her kids are inside and Gabrielle Union is outside, and the panic room stuff has all come down. So she has to break back into her house and also beat the shit out of these guys. And it is definitely one of the, it's like, she's a mom. She would do anything for her kids. And it seems
sounds
like
the tagline.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it. I mean, I love Gabrielle Union. She's fantastic. This movie comes out on Mother's Day, which smart move, y'all. And I wish that there was a video game version of that. Like, that sounds like an incredibly fun, like, imagine that as a stealth game.
Yeah, I feel like the dynamics would be completely different, because I feel like so many dad games are about the detachment that you feel towards your kids, because a lot of game developers have to spend so many hours in the office. So, like, they innately just don't, they don't spend enough time with their kids generally. And so, like, you see that in the game. It's, like, about feeling so distant from your kid. Whereas, like, I feel like if you're a mom, generally speaking, you see a lot of your kid, and you have, like, a way more, like, complex and, like, tough relationship usually. I don't want to speak for anyone.
Brave, the Pixar movie with Merida,
which a lot of people really didn't like, and it spoke to me on. So I'm not saying that it was like a good movie, but I feel like that specific relationship was like really good and interesting. And
the relationship between the mother and the daughter, I didn't really like the movie all the way through. Like, it was wasn't my favorite, but like, I definitely thought that the way that that relationship was developed was really nuanced and interesting. Because like, sometimes, you know, that relationship, the mother daughter relationship, is really fraught, and like, it's just a struggle to try to understand each other.
And it's fraught partially because society puts so many pressures on, like, what being a good mom means. And it's so impossible to be a good mom in other people's eyes unless you, like, literally give everything up except for being a mom. And even then, like, you know, you're always going to get advice on, like, what you should feed your kid, and, like, when you should feed your kid. And, like, like, every single aspect of it is, like, so complicated. So just,
I've gone down the mommy blog rabbit hole sometimes. It's really, really terrifying just to see the lengths that a lot of these women are going through to look like the perfect mom to outsiders. Or just like, even being in parts of Brooklyn where you see the moms address their children like little French train conductors. Like, have you seen? Like, it's really, really cute, but it's like, how do you have the time to do like a perfect crown braid?
I've heard that having a kid in New York is particularly stressful, because like, there's like elite pre-K schools that you have to like fight for to get in, and it's like super selective. And it's like, if you don't get into that school, then like, that already like lessens your chances that you're going to get to like a good college, and like blah blah blah. And it's just, I can't even imagine. Whereas with dad, it's like, Kratos doesn't know if he can put his hand on his child's shoulder. Whereas like, I can't even imagine what the mom went through.
Well, you know, I do try to think about what this game would be like if Kratos' wife was alive. Because she seems like a really interesting character, this woman that was a good enough fighter in her own right to woo the god of war.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to and see she taught, their story.
She taught the kid how to hunt.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah. And she spent a lot of her time with her son, who's a really comp, and taught her son all these old myths and some of the old language. It's really, really cool. And I wish that, I wish the game had her in it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, that's a complaint I will always agree with, is, like, if you present to me a female character that sounds really interesting and then you don't let me actually see or interact with her, like, I'm gonna be frustrated because...
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the Zelda problem again.
It's a totally like the Zelda thing, where it's just like, oh, I like this story, but I'm this other guy.
Yeah. So for me, I've started playing it, and I don't know that I'm really all that interested in the father-son relationship. I mean, it's obviously well-written. For me, it's more that I'm interested in playing this because it seems to actively confront the legacy of the series, because the entire idea is that, like, you know that Kratos has been this hyper-violent, like, whatever, like, problematic, whatever dude in previous games. And in this one, it's explicitly about how he doesn't want to pass that on to his kid, right? Yeah. And, like, that's what I'm interested in. Even though I haven't really played, and I've played, like, the demo of one of them, but I just saw, like, snippets of some of the things that were in them. I'm like, I don't know if that's my kind of game, but I really like the idea of, like, specifically confronting itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to give anything away, mm-hmm. I do not think you'll be disappointed. I got to a very pivotal, there is an article up on Kotaku, a chat between Jason Kirk and Chris Kohler that is about the specific moment I got to last night. Uh-huh. And it really, it's a game that is not afraid to turn everything emotionally on its head, mm-hmm. From the previous games. I also had, like, basically negative interest in God of War prior to this game. Uh-huh. And I picked up God of War just because all our coworkers were saying ad nauseum how good of a game it was. And I'm just like, well, I might as well see what it's all about. And mm-hmm. I'm very surprised at how much I like it.
Yeah, it seems more emotionally honest than other games is kind of what I've gotten from it.
Everyone in this game is a big ol' mess. Like, everybody has a big capital P problem. I'm really impressed by the writing
here. Yeah, like, one of the first enemies that you meet, and he's just called the Stranger. I'm sure you find out who he actually is. He just keeps yelling at you at how he can't feel anything. And I'm like, are you okay, buddy? I know we're, like, punching each other in the face, like, and destroying everything around us, but it sounds like you're going through something. That sounds
I'm kind of horny for the Stranger, I'm not going to lie. Oh, yeah. he's like this, like, grizzled dude covered in glowing tattoos. It's like my catnip. Come on.
He kind of looks like Conor McGregor.
Oh, my God, he kind of does. I'm not mad about it.
So you still haven't found out who he is?
I don't want to tell you anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a good twist. The fact that you, like, because he comes up to your house and he just looks like a drunkard or something, and then you find out no,
this he's guy's gonna kick your ass.
Yeah, he's just as powerful.
I really like how quickly this game throws you in the shit too. Like, when I got to that fight, I was like, I don't know that I am ready to do this, and then I so quickly learned the mechanics of the game through that fight. It made me feel like this game does a good job of making you feel smart and making you feel like you understand its systems. So it eases you into things, like, not in a drip feedy way, but just, like, at the very moment you think, man, I wish I just had this kind of thing, the game will hand it to you. Mm-hmm. Like, the Spartan Rage mechanic is introduced in that fight. And that's when you just think, I am about to die, and I really wish that I could just beat the shit out of this guy. And then they're like, Spartan Rage is available.
There you go.
And, like, that fight, I think, was a really good example of how smart this game design is at leading the player to making them, leading them into the guided moments, but making them think that they thought of it themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a good smart game. Speaking of horny for things.
Oh, God.
So we were talking today. We should just have this as a segment. And I think...
What are people horny for this week, Gita?
What are people horny for this week? Okay, well, I've been playing Hogwarts Mystery, the new Harry Potter mobile game. And it is a frustrating microtransaction-y mess. But I really like all the new characters.
I feel bad that you've had to play so many of these, like, microtransaction-y
games. Yeah, based on beloved franchises that I personally identify with. God damn it. You know, I'm not... I love mobile gaming, honestly. I do. I spend a lot of time on my phone. I spend a lot of time in transit. And I think that everybody has the right to play a quality game on their iPhone just to kill the time. It shouldn't be quite so arduous of a process to just be able to play a game on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All the new characters, though, in Hogwarts Mystery, I think they're all great. Your best friend is...
These aren't characters from the books. They're, like, brand
new? They're brand new. Because this place takes place in the 80s when the boy who lived Harry Potter was like a child. Okay. Not yet at Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm.
So you will meet characters like Bill Weasley and Nymphadora Tonks, who are from the canon, but later on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So right now you're meeting all of the new original characters. And so you have a best friend who will be either a guy or a girl, depending on what gender you choose. They'll match your gender. Rowan, and in my game, she's a she. She's like a great little nerd. I love her. She's adorable. You meet her and she's like, I'm a fucking weirdo and I don't have any friends. And you're like, well, aww, I'll be your friend. And she's really sweet and very loyal and I really love her. And then you meet your rival, who is Merolda Snide.
God, the names in this, this franchise. Merolda?
Merolda?
Merolda.
Yeah.
It's an interesting,
she's a Slytherin.
Mouthfeel.
The mouthfeel of that name is really messed up. Yeah. Merolda Snide, she's got like a haggard looking smoky eye and like one like puff of orange hair and like in a brown like a mess. And she is the meanest person possible. She calls you a mudblood immediately. She calls you a mudblood immediately. You have an older brother in the game that's been expelled from Hogwarts, so she can't stop bringing that up and like deliberately tries to get you expelled repeatedly.
Wow.
And guess who people are horny for in Harry Potter fandom?
Is it her?
It's her. They want Merolda to step on her.
Wait, I need to see a picture of this. Can you show me?
Hang on.
Like...
Let's see. Let me open up Google. Because when I was looking for people reacting to the microtransactions, all I could also see, what I was seeing on Tumblr was people also be like, y'all need Jesus if you want to like get stepped on by Merolda Snide.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good measure of a meme. If you have to say y'all need Jesus, then it's probably a good meme.
Yeah.
Like bone hurting juice.
Yeah.
Y'all need Jesus.
Fucking Jesus. Yeah, so Merolda Snide, sorry. It's still like a lot. Yeah, she is.
I wonder if like J.K. Rowling has like rules for like the kinds of names that like someone at Slytherin.
Oh, I bet she does. I'm sure she does. let me see. Here you go.
Oh,
she does have sort
so
of like
mad.
Like that mad Slytherin look that I think people really vibe with. You know, it's the smoky eye, probably.
Mm-hmm.
She
looks
so mean.
Mad.
Though.
She looks like she's having a tough time. She's like.
She does.
Yeah, why is she just making this face? You know, they kind of look like the characters in Life is Strange.
They
kind of
do. I'm surprised at how well this game runs on a phone. I mean, obviously it's because they're all pre-rendered scenes, but it's all like 3D graphics, and it's impressive to me that it does not slow my phone down and drain all its battery.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do have this nice cartoony look, like it's very exaggerated. Like
you can
tell.
It's kind of wild to think what can run on a phone.
Yeah,
now.
Right? It's crazy. You can play Fortnite on a phone.
Yeah, what the fuck?
That blows my mind to think about. I just did not believe that could happen. Like, even I need to get a new phone. But, like, even my slightly old phone can run, like, pretty much full-scale video games now.
What the fuck, man?
We live in the future. It's blowing my mind.
So, wait a minute. So, people are horny for... Is she a kid? How old is she?
Harry Potter fandom has always been real loosey-goosey with character ages.
You say loosey-goosey, I'm like, Hufflepuff name.
No, this was like controversial back in the day on LiveJournal, and it led to a lot of pornographic Harry Potter fan fiction communities being suspended from LiveJournal, where, yeah, these characters are ages 11 to 17, so none of them are legal. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
they date, and I think there's also that complicated factor that a lot of us grew up when we were.
Yeah.
That age, and then
yeah, so like thinking about when you're 16, thinking about a 16-year-old having sex doesn't feel that weird,
yeah,
because you're like, I'm 16 and I'm also having sex,
yeah.
But when you're an adult, it's just sort of like, oh, it's freaky that there's porn about this, but like you have to think most of this porn was made by people who are pretty young,
right?
Who are also developing their own sexuality. But yeah, when you meet Marula, she's 11. It's really weird. Like people are talking about her in a romantic way, but it's also just like people. If they are going to draw her in a romantic way, what they're going to say is, in this drawing, we're like 6 years, mm-hmm. we're 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And like that's just kind of always the way it's been in Harry Potter fandom. Like,
you know, and now I'm just thinking that they should make a Harry Potter dating game or something. Or like, a Persona-esque game.
Yes.
You're like immediately like.
That's all that I've ever wanted is like an 80-hour Persona-esque game. Harry Potter RPG.
Yeah, in which you're like managing which classes you take and who you become friends with. And
There could be dungeon crawling. They have dungeons in Hogwarts.
Which, what the fuck?
I mean,
I guess, you know, now that I think about it, there's something very video gamey about that. That like the place that you go to school to just has dungeons where you can like spelunk.
Yeah, there's so many secret parts of Hogwarts that students just discover. And the games themselves are structured in a pretty video gamey way.
Have you played any semesters. of the licensed Harry Potter games? Are they any good?
I played a little bit of Harry Potter Lego, which was supposedly the best of all of them.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't, you know, it was fine. I don't really love the Lego games.
Have you played Pottermore? I signed up for it and I just didn't know what it was. Like, it's an MMO,
it's like an interactive encyclopedia more than it is a game.
Really?
Although it does allow you to take sorting hat quizzes and like you can find your Patronus and stuff.
That's
like that.
That's so weird. I thought they were making an MMO like World of Warcraft or something.
Yeah, I did too when I signed up for it, but no, it's just like a encyclopedia of Harry Potter stuff. It's like a bunch of ads for upcoming Harry Potter franchise things.
Huh.
So like when the Fantastic Beasts movie was coming out, they they released, Pottermore is getting updated with information on the American Wizarding School stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's all just an advertisement.
Do
for
a lot
Fantastic
of people
Beasts.
Use it?
I don't know. I think so.
I can't, like, I don't have a good grasp on what the Harry Potter fandom is like now and how big it is now. Like, I assume it's doing well enough if we keep getting movies.
Yeah.
Right? But
I assume it's still massive. It's not as centralized as it used to be. This was a fandom that made it big on LiveJournal, which was very centralized, where you could know exactly where to go to find the Harry Potter stuff. Mm-hmm. That a lot of those people have grown up and moved on at this point. But you still see them crawling, those big name fans crawling up out of the woodwork, and they're are still people that are dedicated to producing more derivative works, more mm-hmm. fan art. Mm-hmm. It's been a really cool shift in how the fandom visualizes Harry Potter. So I think a lot of people have also realized that they can move away from the movie depictions if they mm-hmm. want to. So now a lot of people draw fan art, draw Harry Potter as Indian, which I've always I thought was super interesting. And a lot of people who draw fan art also draw Hermione as black.
I've definitely seen that.
Yeah. Black Hermione has been a thing the fandoms wanted for a long time because they describe her and she
comes
out.
Wasn't there a controversy recently where, like, people were mad that Hermione wasn't black or something? I can't remember.
No, people were upset that the play cast her as black.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was...
I feel like that just makes it more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's introduced as this know-it-all character with bushy hair and glasses and buck teeth. And you have to understand, when I was 11, I had braces and, like, Coke bottle glasses, mm-hmm. and I did not yet know how to do my hair. So my mother was, like, personally offended when they did not cast me as Hermione in the movie, because she was like, that's just a description
of
you.
Now that I think about it, the Hermione Emma Watson didn't really look like that when she was.
They had to like back comb her hair to make it bushy.
Oh. So they did make it bushy. I just don't even.
In the first movie, it was like not It was straight, but it was teased in the bottom, so it was bushy. Okay. But then as it went on, her hair was just sleek and curly. Which is fine. It's just not what Hermione Granger is described as.
Right. I'm like planning a Harry Potter marathon, and I know I'm going to be so weirded out watching the first movie because they all just look like babies.
Yeah, that movie's real boring. I'm not going to lie to you. Oh, yeah. So you might want to.
I'm going to get high for that one.
Yeah, I mean, the first two, you might have to, honestly. Like, once the third one, it's Alfonso Cuarón directing, and it's so, so, so good. And then the rest of them are David Yates, and they're, like, pretty good. I really liked the fourth one. It adds in a couple of things that I think flesh out some of the movie a little bit. Plus, it's got Robert Pattinson as Cedric Diggory. Mm-hmm. So he...
Do you see him in Good Time? It's, like, this thriller where he has to get his... Because he robs a bank with his cousin, I think. I think they're related, but I'm not entirely sure how. And the cousin is like developmentally disabled in some way, and he gets caught. And so, like, the entire movie is Robert Pattinson trying to break out his cousin from prison. But the thing is, he has like this New Yorker accent, but like every time I look at him, I can't get over all the characters that he's played. Like, I can't see him as
my favorite role of his. Is the main character in Cosmopolis, which is based on this Don DeLillo novel, and it is directed by, what's his name, who did The Fly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it is like this absurd meandering movie where the president's in town, but the ruthless capitalist that Robert Pattinson is playing demands that his limo driver drive him cross town to get a haircut, even though they're going to be blocked by the parade. And just a series of people come in and out of the limousine, and he has an affair. He tries to have sex.
Are you serious? Yeah. Is it in the limousine entire time?
He gets out of it at the end. And that he goes to meet James Gandolfini, who has been trying to kill him the entire movie.
What?
So he points a gun at James Gandolfini and then, like, sort of looks at it and then points it at his hand and shoots himself in the hand. And this, like, character he's playing is, like, the human embodiment of capitalism. And I'm like, yeah, that would happen. If capitalism was a person, instead of murdering the person who's trying to kill him, he would just shoot himself in the hand.
My mind is blown.
It's a great movie. It's so funny. It's also great because Robert Pattinson is just playing it the way he plays Edward from Twilight.
Nice.
Yeah, it's the first movie. I mean,
that already sounds way more interesting. Yeah. Oh, it's the first movie since
he did post Twilight, and you can really tell.
Wonder. Okay,
he's like getting
sense.
It all out of his system. Like, he needs to just
now. It makes more sense.
Yeah, okay. It's great. I find it incredibly funny, but it's one of those dark humor movies. One of the shots from that movie I've also seen in a bunch of like right wing chud roundups of like, this is what happens at protests. People just riot. I was like, no, that's a scene from Cosmopolis. Sorry, guys. So I think that is going to be it for us this week. If you want to get in contact with us, you can find our work on Kotaku.com. You can email us at favethis@kotaku.com or tweet at either of us with the hashtag favethis. I want to give a shout out and thanks to Melomix for doing our theme songs, Scott Wood for doing the commercial music, and Levi Sharp, who's in the booth, who's listening to us and helped us out record this. And you can find us on any of your favorite podcasting platforms. And if you do, it'd be really, really helpful if you left a review or gave us a rating. It just helps with visibility. And I do actually read all of the reviews. And when you leave a nice one, I smile to myself.
And sometimes you read them.
Sometimes I read them. Maybe next episode I'll read a few. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. You'll find us next week here. Bye.